evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, November 3rd, 2016. The Kenyan government deports the spokesman of Riek Machar to Juba.
We will discourage anybody trying to use any of our countries as a launching pad for war. So we are very categorical. We did not target a specific person.
And rights groups around the world are asking the African Union to form a hybrid court in South Sudan.
The fact that conflict is continuing and that human rights violations are continuing is just another reason why the hybrid court needs to be established with urgency.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Kenyan lawmakers say they will not allow South Sudanese politicians residing in their country to promote violence and affect the implementation of the 2015 peace agreement. 11 Kenyan lawmakers today concluded a two-day official visit to Juba, as we hear from Tito Justin.
The Kenyan lawmakers talked to First Vice President Taban Dengai and their South Sudanese counterparts about the progress they made on implementing the peace deal. Asman Kamama, chairperson of the Security Committee in Kenya's parliament, led the Kenyan delegation. He says Kenya is a friend to South Sudan and that the government of Kenya wants to see a very vibrant, prosperous South Sudan. Kamama told reporters at Juba International Airport that Kenya's leaders will do everything in their power to stop South Sudanese opposition politicians from using Kenya territory to destabilize South Sudan.
We will discourage anybody trying to use any of our countries as a launching pad for war. So we are very categorical. We did not target a specific person, but any leader from this region who is bent on trying to excite and encourage people to go to war, our countries must never be used as launching pads.
He says Kenya will also engage other East African leaders and urge them to stop South Sudanese opposition figures from practicing what he calls violent politics.
We are prepared as parliament to take this matter forward by way of coming up with motion and even a bill that will address matters of this nature.
Kamama says the Kenyan lawmakers who visited Juba will be the ambassadors to ensure South Sudanese issues are addressed in a bipartisan manner. Yesterday, Kenya announced it will pull its peacekeepers out of South Sudan a day after the UN Secretary General fired Lieutenant General Johnson Mogai Kimani Odieki, the Kenyan Army's force commander. Kenya also said it will discontinue plans to contribute troops to a regional protection force to be sent to South Sudan and will disengage from the peace process, a statement that contradicts a commitment expressed by this group of lawmakers to continue trying to restore peace in South Sudan. Kamama is urging South Sudanese not to listen to those who incite violence.
What I'll only urge is people of South Sudan that they should not listen to anybody inciting them or trying to encourage them to take up arms or fight among each other. I think this country has high potential, and that if you maintain this peace, this country will prosper and even be one of the best countries in terms of development in this part of the region.
The office of the leader of the SPLM-IO confirmed that the spokesman of Riek Machar was arrested in Kenya Wednesday and deported to South Sudan by the Kenyan government. Machar's office said James Gadet was deported to South Sudan today. Kenyan authorities did not give any reason for deporting Machar's spokesman in Kenya to South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
Dozens of national and international rights organizations have petitioned the African Union to jumpstart the process of establishing the hybrid court as required by the 2015 peace agreement. The group says if a hybrid court was up and running, it would deter more violence across South Sudan. Waki Simon Wudu has this report for VOA from Nairobi.
The petition addressed to African Union Chairperson Kozazana Lamini Zuma calls on the AU to proceed with drafting the statute of the court. The rights groups say delaying the process of establishing the hybrid court any further will deny victims justice. Elizabeth Deng, a researcher with Amnesty International, one of the groups that signed the petition, says evidence of crimes is being lost or destroyed because of the delayed formation of the court. She says prolonging the process may endanger its efficiency in addressing abuses committed during the conflict.
The fact that conflict is continuing and that human rights violations are continuing is just another reason why the hybrid court needs to be established with urgency.
Establishment of the hybrid court is mandated in the 2015 peace agreement aimed at bringing justice to victims of atrocities since the conflict broke out in late December 2013. Deng says despite little to no progress on forming the court, the United States government recently sent more than $3 million to the African Union to start establishing the hybrid court. Deng says people suspected of committing war crimes may try to deter prosecutors by threatening and harassing victims and witnesses of the court. But she says the court will face challenges, but those challenges can be confronted by the AU.
Such as ensuring a very robust victim and witness protection program, considering the location of the court and assessing the potential security and political challenges it might face if it's based in Juba.
Deng says the court can learn lessons from other international criminal tribunals across the world to draft the statute.
Among those lessons, we think, is the need for a robust victim and witness protection program. Also, a need for an independent defense unit to ensure that those accused are adequately supported in terms of their right to a proper defense.
A few months back, South Sudan government officials said they lack the resources needed to begin the process. Deng says the primary responsibility of implementing the justice mechanism lies with the government. And some rights activists say they believe the government is purposely delaying the process. South Sudan government spokesman Michael Makwe denies that charge.
The constitution is not yet out. And after adoption of the constitution, the act will be processed and passed. That will be in conformity with the constitution. And thereafter, people will begin to operationalize the act. And it is the act that will provide the establishment of the hybrid court. These people, because they are crazy, they want to ensure that the government of South Sudan is held responsible all the time.
Although Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, and other rights groups have repeatedly documented rights abuses in South Sudan, Deng says these findings are not criminal investigations to be used in court. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Nairobi.
Yesterday was International Day to End Impunity for Crimes Against Journalists, and media experts in Sudan say the day is an opportunity to raise awareness about the harsh treatment of journalists who are working in countries like Sudan and South Sudan. As Nabil Biagio reports from Khartoum, a veteran Sudanese journalist is calling on the governments and the United Nations to do more to protect journalists.
Safety of journalists is an essential element for freedom of expression, for building democracy and citizen participation. But especially today in the new agenda of United Nations, we recognize it as very important for development. So guaranteeing the safety of journalists is a priority for all the development plans and for reaching the 2030 agenda.
That's France Laroux, Assistant Director General for Communication and Information at the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, also known as UNESCO. The UN says impunity and lack of investigation for acts of violence and assassination of journalists is the main reason crimes against them have continued to increase every year. Over the last 10 years, it is estimated that around 800 journalists have been killed in the line of duty. Mahjoub Mohamed Saleh is a veteran Sudanese journalist and winner of the 2005 Golden Pen of Freedom Award. Mahjoub says this is a day to campaign for the rights of journalists.
It is important that we, everywhere in the world, we shed light on this problem during this day, and we make use of it in furthering justice towards journalists and protection in their work.
Faisal Muhammad Saleh is another veteran Sudanese journalist. He is the executive director at Taiba Press, where he trains reporters. Faisal says crimes against journalists are particularly rampant in some African countries where he has traveled to work with journalists.
It's a very hot issue in some countries where there are conflicts. Sudan is part of that, South Sudan. We have it in Somalia, in DRC, in Central African Republic. If you go through the statistics that issued by international organization, it's really worrying about the future of this profession. And I think many people will flee from the profession when they read the statistics of the journalists who were killed or tortured or harassed by any mean while they are doing their job.
Faisal says there must be a coordinated effort between watchdog groups around the world. He says he supports the idea of Reporters Without Borders and the Committee to Protect Journalists to appoint a special representative for the UN Secretary General on Protection of Journalists.
Appointment of a special representative for the Secretary General of the United Nations could at least focus on the issue and could also report annually to the UN Security Council and to the UN General Assembly about what's happening in every individual country in the world. In 2016, which is still have 2 months to go, almost about 28 journalists killed. Last year, I think there are 37 or 38 journalists killed. Such a newborn state like Southern Sudan, in 2015, there were 7 journalists killed while they are doing their job.
Faisal says a special representative would enforce the international conventions meant to protect journalists. He says Sudan would benefit greatly from that because no laws exist in Sudan to protect journalists.
Journalists are subject to different type of harassment. They are summoned to security offices. We hear about that every day. There is a confiscation of newspaper, closure of newspaper, detention of journalists, even sometimes torture against journalists, and I think we need more effort.
Faisal says Sudanese journalists need the support of regional and international organizations to end the harassment and abuse of journalists. The International Day to End Impunity for Crimes Against Journalists was created after the Maguindanao massacre in the Philippines in 2009, where at least 34 journalists were killed, and the killing of 2 French journalists in Mali in 2013. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Khartoum.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a Ugandan lawmaker is appealing for more support for South Sudanese refugees in Uganda. That story is coming up next.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
where do you turn for information about politics in your community?
If I'm to get any information about politics, there is normally a program on the radio, and that is CBS. They normally provide information about the, mainly the Ugandan politics. Then not only Ugandan politics, they also go an extra mile and deal with the foreign politics stuff.
Facebook has come in, but has quicker information. Before they document in the newspapers, you will go to Facebook, you go to WhatsApp, you will already be knowing what is going around as politics is concerned.
always go to the internet, cafes, and I always get the right information that I want from the cafe.
I normally read the dailies, or since now there's a lot of information on the internet as well, I go there and I check out what's happening every day.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The leader of minority in Uganda's parliament is leading a team of 13 opposition politicians on a one-week tour of refugee camps in Uganda. Winnie Kiza says she will introduce a motion in the parliament to increase funding for South Sudanese refugees, many of whom fled their country shortly after violence broke out in December 2013. Mongome Devs Rakarinj has more for VOA from Uganda's Adjumani district.
The UN has held Uganda's refugee policy as a model for global refugee management. According to a World Bank study on forced displacement and mixed migrations in the Horn of Africa, Uganda's 2006 Refugee Act is considered one of the most progressive and generous in the world. The Act provides for freedom of movement, right to work, and also provides land for refugee settlements. Karisto Duku is a community leader at Paglinya Refugee Camp. He describes the food rations for refugees to Uganda's lawmakers who visited the area yesterday. Duku says the UN World Food Programme gives each refugee 12 kilograms of sorghum per month, which he says is not enough to sustain them through the month.
Beans, you are getting 2 mini marks per person per month, which is less than a kilo for a person. You come to cooking oil, it is 500 milliliter, which is half of the liter per person per month.
Uganda Parliament Minority Leader Winfred Chiza says refugees are not receiving basic necessities.
Biggest challenge comes with food. The food they are receiving is still limited. And we would pray that anybody out there who can find it within their hearts and means to answer the call and contribute generously towards the food that can be given to the refugees in this settlement.
Chiza also expressed concern about classroom conditions for refugee children.
The children actually are packed. One classroom is accommodating children who can even be safely accommodated in 4 classrooms or even 5. So this kind of environment may limit the learning of our young children.
Chiza stresses that it is the government's responsibility to ensure that refugees' rights are respected.
So in our report, we intend to put an issue that asks government to raise the budget of the Ministry of Disaster, which caters for the refugees, and that is under the Prime Minister's office. That is why we are also equally calling upon other people of goodwill to support this budget.
Uganda ranks number 8th among countries receiving the highest number of refugees and asylum seekers in the world. According to the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, Uganda hosts more than 500,000 refugees, mainly from South Sudan and the Democratic Republic of Congo. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinj in Adjumani District, Northern Uganda.
Still in Uganda, as the World Food Programme continues to cut food ratio for South Sudanese refugees who arrived before July 2015, more refugees are taking to the market and starting up small businesses to finance their daily needs. But the refugees say they are struggling to make a profit. Simon Peter Apiku reports for VOA from refugee settlement in Kiriadongo.
South Sudanese traders in the Kiriadongo refugee settlement say they face stiff competition from established businesses run by nationals. Amal Dorin, who arrived in the camp in 1992, sells homemade bread at a nearby settlement market.
Life is really, really hard. And even paying my children's school fees is really hard for me.
The refugees say that a lack of capital often makes it difficult to start and expand a small business near the settlement, which houses more than 65,000 refugees. Lucia John, a mother of 8 from South Sudan's Upper Nile region, came here in 2014. She says her husband cannot support the family because he is staying at a UN Protection of Civilian site in Malakal, Upper Nile as an internally displaced person. John says to feed her family, she makes and sells embroidered bed sheets.
I borrowed some money, then I bought materials first, then threads, then I use sewing needle to sew it.
Doreen says she raised the capital for her trade by selling part of her food ration.
When I was given some sorghum, I sold part of it to get some money. Then I bought the baking flour. I made some bread. I sold the bread and I got something like 30,000 the first time. So from there, half of the money, I take it back. I use for buying more flour, and some I use for feeding.
John says hand-designed embroidery is tedious work. As a result, prices of embroidered bed sheets tend to be high and beyond the reach of most refugees.
Sometimes it takes, or it depends, takes like 1 month, or depends on how fast you are.
Vuni Solomon owns a kiosk in the settlement that sells consumer products at retail prices. Solomon left South Sudan in August following renewed fighting between the South Sudan Army and troops loyal to former first Vice President Riek Machar. He says business is slow.
The market is somehow, the business, sometimes maybe you got just in a day, something of 5,000, and like this, the business is not going.
Doreen says most of her customers are fellow South Sudanese refugees, which hampers her ability to expand the business.
The type of the bread I make is the salty bread. Some Ugandans are not used to that.
Solomon says he turned to business in the market because as an orphan, there was no one to support him. He says he still hopes to resume school one day after dropping out at the secondary level.
I don't have someone to support me. The money which I get from here, I hate the profit I'm going to buy with something which I need.
For Doreen, the solution to her problems lie not in the business she runs, but the realization of peace in South Sudan.
If the government could at least bring peace back, I really need to go back to my country to start my life again.
For VOA News, I'm Simon Peter Apiku in Kiriadongo District, Uganda.
From Kiriadongo, we move back to Juba. Some young South Sudanese entrepreneurs say despite the ongoing conflict and their economic conditions, they are determined to establish small and medium-sized enterprises. Dozens of aspiring entrepreneurs recently finished a one-week training program on how to develop enterprise. Michael Atit has the story for VOA from Juba.
A senior program advisor for the United Nations Development Program in South Sudan says entrepreneurs can create job opportunities for many youth and help stabilize the country's economy. Martha Abari, who graduated from the training, says she has gained a better understanding of the business environment in South Sudan, which will help her cake business. Abari sells her cakes to local groceries, schools, and hotels in Juba. She urges other youth to work hard and make use of available opportunities.
Because many youths are blaming the environment situation. They are saying there is lack of opportunity. But through this opportunity given to us, it let us know that even where there is problem, there is an opportunity for us.
25-year-old Befris Foni Joseph, who also attended the entrepreneurship training, says she has learned how to set business goals. Foni, who is a third-year student of development studies in Uganda Bosoga University, says she has been struggling to pay her tuition fees. She says with her new skills, she plans to set a small restaurant before returning to school in 2 months' time.
Because there, the competition is not high, there's not too many restaurants, and there's too many people working there, and there's no restaurants. You'll find people going a long distance to look for food during lunch hour while they leave their work. And then I think to open a restaurant there, I can even make some money, and I even make them not to go very far to look for food.
UNDP advisor Berhanu says he believes the country's fragile economy will grow once the private sector expands.
The problem is our universities, including where I was teaching, they don't teach us how to make money. They teach us how to be good employee. My mother, the teacher, will tell me, you will study. Why? Because you will be a good accountant. You will be a very good administrator. It does not teach us how to make money or how to create a job. So this is why this training is very, very important in your life.
24-year-old Bakata Justin, another trainee, says he graduated from the University of Juba last year but has yet to find a job. But Justin says, armed with his newly acquired entrepreneurship skills, he plans to start his own business.
I studied logistics in the university, so getting a job wasn't easy. So through the help of Empretech and their training, I know from here I want to be my own boss. Yeah, instead of searching for a job, I want to be at least a creator.
Empretech is a United Nations program established by the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development to promote the creation of sustainable, innovative, and internationally competitive small and medium-sized entrepreneurs. Nana Boateng is Empretech's chief executive officer in Ghana and was the training facilitator. Boateng says he sees South Sudan as a land of opportunity despite the ongoing crisis. He told the graduates if they can zero in on the needs of their communities, that is a business opportunity.
We facilitate this program to come to understand these competencies and behaviors. And once you're able to identify this, and then you practice and they become a habit of yours, you're able to identify opportunities, you're able to identify the gaps that exist in South Sudan, and then you develop your business ideas and fill the gaps, and then the rest follows in the form of a business.
The aspiring entrepreneurs completed the program in Juba last weekend. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
By the way, you can also listen to us on 107.5 FM in Nairobi and 93.5 FM in Juba. That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Binia Kongole by Mr. Langs. We have been listening to Mr. Langs with the song Binia Kongole. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Rakabu kondu mampira, la viru talinga la lesa ba.